Hello everyone and welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast number 332. So that was brutal, Bielsa. On the way, you win some, you get smashed some, and now really isn't the time for Wales, never mind a derby. My name is Michael Bailey, and joining us here this Monday at Argent Towers, we have Chief Norwich City Correspondent Paddy Davitt. Hello there, Pad.
Michael, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Great to have you back on the pod. It's been far too long.
And all the better for it, no doubt. Some proper analysis.
Exactly. About time. Speaking of which, been stepping into your shoes a lot. Ian Clark, head of news here. We're going to have some proper analysis now. Yeah. Clarky?
Well, start of the late shift for me on this bank holiday, so it's good to be around.
It is, and thank you for sparing us a few moments of what is going to be a quiet bank holiday, I hope, and not too late. We will, of course, rattle through this. It is a bank holiday. We've got a busy week coming up, and of course, we've had a busy week too, so lots to get through. But before we get stuck into all that, remember, you can get in touch with us here, all of us, to share your thoughts and set the agenda. Just send an email to thepinken@archant.co.uk or get in touch via all the possible social media channels you can imagine, be it on The Pinken or our personal profiles. And make sure you don't miss a single podcast this summer and through the season by subscribing. You can find all the details you need at pinken.com/podcast. So as always, we start with that was the week that was, and we'll start with the most pertinent action of that week, which was, of course, Leeds. 3-0 defeat. Paddy, the score was pretty fair in terms of the reflection of the game, and I think everyone's stuck with a realisation of where Norwich City are. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. Yeah, it was a brutal reminder of the levels. And I put it in my pointer straight after the game, and I've probably felt on reflection I was a little bit too harsh, but I basically said it's the difference between also-rans and contenders, and Norwich are firmly in the former category, which it'd be hard to dispute, but it is quite worrying that they were dismissed so easily after giving a good go for 20-25 minutes. But are we now saying that this Norwich team can only muster 20-25 minutes worth of competitive action before the white flag got raised? Leeds were very good on the flip side, so you need to sort of filter anything you say negatively about Norwich in that performance against a team who were absolutely flying, you know, under this football hipster Bielsa. You see 3,000 fans there, they're fully engaged, and it's been said, if that club's grabbed by the scruff of the neck and pushed in the proper direction, then it shouldn't be anywhere near the Championship. They're a massive club, and maybe he's the man to pull it all the strings together, but Leeds being Leeds, I wouldn't completely anoint them as the champions. But for me, yeah, there was a clear parallel with when Wolves came down here round about this time last season, and they were superior in every department, and it was painful to watch from a Norwich perspective. And as the season panned out, Wolves went on and proved week in, week out, they were head and shoulders above everything else in the Championship. At half-time, actually, 2-0 down, I drew that parallel, but said Leeds weren't quite in Wolves' category. And I think a Leeds fan came back to me and said, well, we've got another 45 minutes yet. And to be fair, by the end of the game, I did think they were every bit as good as Wolves last season, because they were so, really, I mean, ultimately, if they had moved through the gears, that could have been 5 or 6. You know, they chose not to. That maybe Bielsa's influence managing the game at 2-0. They let Norwich play in front of them for 20 minutes, and Hernandez waxing a third, and it's a lot of seats getting slapped up and people leaving. So troubling, but within the context of they played probably the best side in the division at this stage of the season.
Well put indeed. I guess lots of talk about tactical ploys, and of course Daniel as well, and I'll come back to that with them in a moment, Pad. But Clarkie, the thing for me was that Norwich went behind and obviously conceded a second very quickly, and that was it really. It was like a switch went off and the belief in what they were trying to do just drained away. Now maybe that's understandable, because they felt that Leeds were decent enough as it was. Now we're 2-0 down, we're a bit screwed, but that's not really good enough, is it, for everyone watching?
No, actually, Paddy, I don't think you were harsh with also-rans and, you know, title contenders, because I think that's exactly what it was for me. They just look so much better. The body language from the players after we were 2-0 down, and particularly for me, I mean, I haven't been Farke's biggest critic by any means, but I just thought he stood there with his coat done up on the sidelines. A lot of the time he just sat, you know, in his seat in the dugout, looking clueless, didn't quite know what to do next, didn't know whether to make a sub, not make a sub, didn't know what to shout at the players. So almost hid away while the you know, we were just being overrun, and that was worrying for me at this early in the season against, albeit, yeah, a very good side. And I also felt the same way about Wolves last year. I thought in every department, you know, from those early moments when those Leeds defenders got a couple of good blocks in, and the way that they brought the ball out, the way that they found their players, the way they moved so freely across the pitch, you know, that second goal, however many, you know, many passes there were, it was fantastic. So, but yeah, I just thought we gave up too easily and just said, okay, you're much better than us and we're going to give up.
It was just, I mean, it was a wonderful second goal. It was perhaps a shame that all the Norwich players seemed to be also enjoying the second goal whilst jogging alongside them. As I said, Daniel Farke's, it wasn't so noisy and antagonistic in the ground, but clearly a lot of the post-match reaction has been quite negative towards Daniel. And I think there's clearly anecdotal evidence from people in the ground who are saying that people who had been patient are starting to go, well, yeah, second season now, and it's not really looked like it's progressed much. But my only issue with that is they're right, but given that the players they've sold in the summer for a lot of money, is there any expectation that they should be better? I know I thought that this season's squad was probably better balanced and there were more options, but to then have it producing better football, is that beyond it, or is that should be that be part of what we're expecting?
Well, I mean, ultimately, 12 points available now, if my maths are correct, and they've picked up four of those. And
4 from 15.
Yeah. And Alec Neil, Preston down here last midweek, he was asked after that game, bearing in mind they'd just lost to Norwich, and was 4 points, which I think they had on the board from, obviously that would have been 12, a good start. And he was quite categorical. He said, no, it's not a good start. So you can dig beyond the numbers and look for, yeah, in this game or that game or in this moment they were unlucky or that moment, but I think 5 games in is more than sufficient to take a view, and it would be hugely concerning. Clarkey has, I thought, been fairly black and white there. You know, he's not happy with Farke at all. He's not happy with what he's seeing, and I think something you just said there, Michael, is what I feel now after Saturday's game, is that maybe that romp who were in the middle in terms of Farke and willing to give him a chance, I think it's turning now. It's definitely turning. And then it's not purely because Leeds, it's because Leeds becomes after Preston, which was unconvincing for a large part. And if that ball from Callum Robinson bounces over the line, that's probably a defeat. It comes off the back of all the other 2 or 3 games prior to that, where they haven't got the points on the board. You can't keep saying, oh, we've been unlucky in this game or we were unlucky in this moment. You know, 5 games, league games in, 4 points on the board, nearer the bottom than the top, on the back of a season of supposed transition last season. And OK, yeah, they've lost some players in the summer, but that's the reality of the situation, you know. That isn't going to change anytime soon. So these are big moments now in terms of Farke's longevity, certainly. And unfortunately, next up, we'll put Cardiff to one side because it's irrelevant in the bigger scheme of things, but next up is Portman Road, and you're going there to a team and a new manager who hasn't won a game yet. If he gets his first win against Norwich, then the fallout will be pretty brutal, I think.
Don't worry, Paddy, you've got plenty of time to talk about the derby. But one of the interesting stats that came from the weekend, I thought, is that Norwich won 4 games out of 20. And of course, there'll be a lot of people listening to this going, well, yeah, but that's 2 seasons. That's, you can't do calendar stats. It means nothing. Well, I disagree in the terms of it's certainly a better correlation of figures than what we've had this season. It's more of a trend. And yes, of course, players have changed, blah, blah, blah. But likewise, there is a trend and there is a pattern that you do well not to ignore. And that's the reality, isn't it? Norwich under Daniel Farke since the turn of the year have been sketchy, and as much as people have wanted it to work, they're just not picking up the points, and they have to be very careful that this season doesn't end up being anything more untoward. They've got fixtures coming up in the next month where they can prove that it won't be, because they've got to go to Reading, they've got to go to QPR, both in the space of 4 days, mid-September, and they've got Wigan at home as well, Derby away, so you know, Derby will obviously be a tricky game, but there are games there that they should pick up points and then prove it. But if this 4 wins out of 20 run continues, then things won't be easy. They will be getting harder, and the pressure will be up at a completely different level.
Yeah, I totally agree about Ipswich. I think that's a massive game, and if it goes the wrong way, I think the moderate calls, you know, quite loud among some, will become very vocal among a huge number of people, because the significance of that game, you know, the long run we've had, you know, the fact that they are bottom, and you know, they couldn't perhaps have much of a worse start, and if they turn us over, that's going to be really bad news. And I think the point you made about it could have been so much worse against Leeds, I think if they'd have wanted it, if they'd have been on a, you know, a points per goals bonus, then it would have been a lot worse. And I really think they took the foot off the pedal and were knocking it around, and like you say, just taking the heat out of the game, managing the victory. A comfortable victory. So if you know, if that had been 5 or 6, I think that would have stepped things up even more.
We will move the chat on, but before we do that, if you are listening to this podcast on Apple, on an Apple device, whichever, then feel free to leave us a review or rating. It's very straightforward to do. Go for it. We'll always be grateful. And you know, if you haven't got anything positive to say, you might as well just, you know, say something anyway, because we'll always have a little read. So, gongs of the week. Paddy, this is your first taste of these. I know how much you love this sort of stuff. Clark, I'll come to you first. Our big Duncan Forbes hero of the week. Have you got any nominations?
Well, probably quite an unlikely one, and it's got to be Mrs. Clark. I did tweet about it. We were down in Brighton. We had a family week away, which was lovely, last week, and I had to do quite a lot of negotiating. It was a bit like signing a new player, actually. But for us to get back in time for the game, I built up that, you know, it was Leeds at home. You know, they were top of the league and all this sort of stuff. So eventually, after a little bit of delicate talks, she agreed. We rushed back, got stuck in traffic on various roads between the South Coast and Norwich, and we got there. And of course, it all went wrong. But thanks to Mrs. Clark for at least allowing us to make the effort to get back despite the result.
What a sterling effort, much appreciated. Paddy, I've got a couple of suggestions, but do you want to go first?
No, you go for it.
Well, Timu Pukki for breaking the deadlock against Preston, because that goal could still prove a vital one. And Louis Thompson, back after almost 2 years out. Of course, his last start in the league for Norwich was also at home to Leeds United. He's had 2 Achilles injuries since then, and serious injuries too, career-changing injuries. And he makes his first start against Leeds this Saturday and did okay. I've seen lots of people say it was incredible and all this sort of stuff, and I think that's maybe overblowing it a tad in terms of his performance. But certainly it was great to be back, and he didn't let anyone down, and he was solid. And let's hope he can kick on and develop from there, I guess.
Yeah, Thompson spot on, yeah. If I was going to be flippant, and probably Jane, who does the media food, because it was hot dogs, and they're my favourite. So, but with the asterisk rider, we're not there for the food, obviously, we're there to work, but it does add to the ambience when you walk into the press room and the hot dogs are on. And given they got beat 3-0 and it could have been 6 or 7, then that was probably the highlight of the day. Well done, Jane.
Well done, Jane, top stuff. Our Kevin Muscat villain of the week, I've got here, and this seems a, you know, if you've got a better one, then say it. But Tim Krul. Let's sum this up quickly, because clearly Tim Krul, that was a great signing. If he could rediscover the form we knew he had in him, or we hoped he had in him, and let's be honest, early games and he's making mistakes, and the more he makes, the less confidence the defenders in front of him are going to have, and it's going to become more of an issue unless he can prove that he can do it consistently. How do you see this playing out, Pat?
Well, it's interesting because somebody's tweeted me in the last day or two and pointed out that a certain individual called John Ruddy, when he first came in, he was making 1 or 2 ricks, and he didn't turn out too bad. Obviously, John didn't have a major injury that curtailed, you know, his progress. Let's get it straight. Before a cruciate injury, Tim Krul is one of the best in the Premier League, a Holland international. So, but the questions will continue to linger. Is that injury now really scuppered his ability to get back to anywhere near that level? And have Norwich got a shell of a Tim Krul rather than the guy who made his name in the Premier League? That's the element of gamble, because the reality is you wouldn't have got Tim Krul here any other reason, unless there was, you know, something that had gone badly wrong in his career. And sadly, that's a heavy injury, cruciate ligament injury. So I wouldn't completely write him off yet, no. I mean, because he was good at Sheffield United. He made an excellent save from Leon Clark, and he was also pretty good, I thought, against Preston as well, when, you know, there's 1 or 2 moments he was called on and his positioning was secure. But on the flip side, yeah, he's making too many errors, which then does induce palpable anxiety, I'm sure, in the defenders in front of him. But I think it's a bit too early to make definitive judgments, isn't it? So, you know, let's see where we are with Tim Krul. Sort of, you know, maybe another 10 games down the line. If he's still making the ricks he's making now, then you get him out because he's not going to do the job for you.
Kaki, you got a villain of the week?
Well, I mean, I was going to say Krul. I think for me, the three real errors he's made. One obviously was just went through his hands. The one on Saturday, there was a decision making element to it, and Farke sort of implied that, you know, he didn't catch the header that came across that led to the first goal, but it was the fact that he pushed it out rather than, you know, the decision to put it to the side or flip it over, whatever. And then it was his positioning for the third goal, where, you know, he was just in the wrong place. He wasn't covering his near post, which, you know, I play a little bit of Monday Night Football, but you know, one of the basics surely is to get your near post covered and get in the way of it, even if he hadn't caught that one and pushed out for corner. But not to be in that position is worrying for me.
Simeon Jackson, moment of the week is our last one.
Well, because I've been away this week, I need to go back to Brighton, I suppose. It was when we were having a nice family meal, and I promised I wasn't going to sort of be too obsessed with the Preston game. But when I saw your boys' tweets flying through that Tetti had scored that wonder goal, and before that Pukki had scored, I had to cheer in the middle of the meal. So that was great. And sometimes if you sort of think, oh, it's going to be a draw now, it's 80 minutes gone, nothing seems to be happening. And then when you're not actually there witnessing it all and you see the goals flying in... That was probably the highlight so far of the season, really, after a fairly indifferent period so far.
Yeah, I've got Alex Tetti as my moment of the week, mostly because he was so dog awful for that entire game. I mean, never seen anything like it. When he was walking towards us after the game to the media, I was just going, oh God, because like you have scored, but this was a shocker. And fair play to Alex, he was hugely honest in terms of his own performance, repeatedly saying a certain S word, and I can't remember what they played out on Radio Norfolk, but I'm guessing they beeped it or cut it or something or other. And it was a wonderful strike, not probably the best in a Norwich shirt, but one hell of a goal. So there you go, Alex. We wonder if we'll see him at Cardiff or indeed Ipswich. We will see.
Well, he was in Pret a Manger before the game on Saturday, apparently buying paninis, from what I hear. When mate Armani saw him with a hoodie up, which I didn't tweet before the game, so I thought it might get me in trouble, but I probably will now.
So on the sidelines, we just a little bit away from the match action before we get stuck into what's coming up. Deadline day 2 is fast approaching. Pad, Friday. Do we know exactly what time the deadline is yet? Have we? No,
I've not looked. If anybody knows, let us know.
Yeah, we're kind of assuming it's when it goes from the 31st to September in Europe, Central Europe, which is why it would be 11 p.m. here, because midnight would be Central European time. But I haven't seen it confirmed anyway. We will see. But Tim Closer was perhaps going to be one of the departures, but it does seem like Canova's interest has cooled, so the reports go, because Norwich are asking for €4 million. We've got a few players who might come out of the building, but of course we've had the press conference with Daniel today, and he wasn't exactly banging the drum for a lot of action, was he?
No, I think we might have another quiet one if we take him at face value, although with the caveat, and he loves to insert the caveat that, you know, an unbelievable opportunity might come along, slash an injury which might force him into the market, slash somebody comes for one of their players. But on the latter point, given that Oliveira has been linked again, Forrest, I see, since the weekend, nothing close in Farker's words, so... That to me tells me, as we sit here recording this on Bank Holiday Monday, it's going to be as you were. But, you know, these things can move by the hour, let alone by the day. So let's not completely say it's going to pass Norwich by without anything happening. But yeah, you don't get anything from Farker's sense, certainly, that A, he wants to lose any of his key players, and B, he's in a great hurry to bring anybody in. I mean, we've seen Harrison Reed, you asked him about this, who this afternoon has confirmed the move to Blackburn. But it quite clearly was a case that they possibly would have liked to have done something there at the start of the summer. But at that stage, Mark Hughes wanted to have a look at him in pre-season. So, you know, that ship had long since sailed. So given how Norwich like to do their business and put a lot of homework into it, I don't see anything really coming out that we don't already know about. So, no, I think it's going to be very quiet.
Which does beg the question in terms of Nelson Oliveira and Russell Martin, what happens other than them just sort of swanning around Colney, presumably getting in the way because they're not playing football?
Yeah, well, I was at the fans, the supporters forum the other night, and Webb seemed to be pretty clear that he thought certainly Russ was going to go out on loan somewhere, and he said he thought Oliver might have something happen with him, but I guess, you know, that was 10 days ago now, so if Farker's saying what he's saying today, then maybe what we've got is what we've got.
God, imagine that was said at a time before we knew Norwich's away dressing rooms were painted pink. God. Moving on just to the under-23s. Well done, lads. They've won 4-0 at West Brom this afternoon. I don't know who got the fourth goal, but I think Adam Ida got a couple and...
Hat-trick,
was it?
Yeah.
And Spyro got the other one?
I think so, yeah.
And boys are on flames. I think that's what the kids say. They're on flames or something or other. So well done, lads. And we'll be, of course, keeping track of the under-23s throughout the season. They are at Carrow Road on Friday, aren't they? I can't remember who they're playing. Wolves.
Yeah.
Big John.
Yeah, Big John will get a game. Not Ryan. He's doing very well. So that is at 7 o'clock, is it, on Friday?
Yeah.
7 o'clock on deadline day.
Free admission as well. So you think still school holidays, you know, no Saturday game, you might get a few along.
I fancy watching it, but deadline day night, it's not ideal unless we've already had the shutdown by then. If you see us at Carrow Road, you know there's not a lot of transfer deadline business that's going to be taking place. Okay, so it's mailbag time. As always, this is where the discussion is led by your emails, tweets and other interactions. And of course, you can email us anything you wish. The address is thepinken@archant.co.uk, and of course you can get in touch with us on all sorts of social media channels too. I'm sure you know exactly what they all are. We've of course had a press conference as well, so that's probably got a little bit, everything's got a bit wiped up in all that. But the one we can discuss here is from Mike Jones, and let's have this question. Would a heavy defeat in Wales, Cardiff of course, and then a derby defeat on the weekend be the beginning of the end for Farker? Looks like frustration is starting to set in with the fans, as you mentioned too earlier, Pat. At what point does the patience run out? How long does he have to right the ship, Clarkey?
Just going back to the fans forum when Webber, I thought was really interesting, entertaining and as honest as always. And I sort of came away there with mixed views on why I was trying to read what he was saying about Webber. Because on the one hand, Webber on Farker. On one hand, he was saying, you know, that basically we've got this model and, you know, he's fairly open that it was always an ongoing process with changing a head coach. And so you think, well, maybe that means he hasn't got that faith in him. But on the other hand, several instances when he brought in Jamal Lewis, when he didn't play Russ Martin and things like that, when he was really talking up Farker's... his, you know, his sort of courage and his coaching ability. So, so that's probably not answer the question. But I think that Paddy's right about Cardiff as a bit of a sideshow. But I do think that Ipswich is a massive result. If that goes the wrong way, I think beginning of the end, maybe a bit further on than that.
It's really interesting because I mean Ipswich. This, I mean, we could probably bring this in with the week ahead as well, given we know what the two games are that's coming up. But the derby always has the propensity to be a meltdown game, doesn't it? Whatever the result. I mean, Norwich fans haven't experienced a derby defeat in 10 years. They probably won't even remember how to deal with it, which, you know, is understandable. And clearly, by the law of averages, which I do tend to believe in, probably given more weight than they should, you know, Ipswich are going to win a game at some point. We've already touched on Paul Hurst's situation. This Sunday could be primed for it, in all honesty. But I've got a feeling in my head that, you know, okay, that's one. These are all sort of individual situations, and it's when you get to September and away games at QPR and Reading that, you know, you really, the more mundane stuff, that it's whether Daniel really has lost track of where Norwich are and what they're doing. But I can appreciate and I can fully understand that if things go wrong on Sunday, that's not going to be quite as straightforward as feeling like that, because it's going to be a long old international break.
Correct, but you've hit the nail on the head for me earlier on. Four, what was that stat you quoted? 4 wins in 20 games.
Yeah.
It's not about Ipswich. It's not in the sense of, you know, one game in isolation. That is just potentially another tipping point. What it is a regressive trend, and players are coming and going. You know, there's been a window to, you know, refresh your squad, but the results trend wise is downwards, and that can't continue indefinitely. You know, if you're getting into, you've referenced that period of games and sort of September, October time, if you're getting into the shadow of Christmas and you're in the bottom six, then, you know, it's quite clear it's not working, and he's not getting a tune out of that set of players. So Clarkie's point is right. I think we won't accelerate his exit, but when the time does come, whenever that is, there will be two parts to Farker's legacy for me. There'll be the really difficult scenario of having to deal with the financial meltdown from losing parachute money / developing young talent like Jamal Lewis, James Maddison. You could put him in that category because he was nowhere near the first team under Alec Neil. And on those measures, absolutely superb work Daniel Farker's done. And Norwich may reap the benefit of that for years to come now. But purely in terms of a coach who actually goes out and wins football matches in the Championship, you would have to say if this continues, then he's failed on that measure. So it's a very difficult, there's no simple black and white yes or no answer. But the reality is, ultimately, he should be judged on winning football games. And if this trend continues, then he won't be in a job.
Thanks for your question, Mike. Top stuff, Paddy. And it does, again, it filters into expectations, doesn't it, Clarkie? Because with the squad, the sales they've made, and where they're getting the tune out of the players, are other people who are desperate for a change thinking that if that happens, Norwich are suddenly going to become top six contenders? Because the reality of the landscape Norwich are operating in, this isn't 2 years ago. They have no money. They have no real big players other than the ones they can bring on and unearth. They are competing in a similar field to Brentford and Millwall, as we've said, and Ipswich, who have all been doing it for a longer period of time. It's not a straightforward landscape. If people want a change of head coach, it's not going to propel Norwich into the top six.
No, and you think that, you know, a head coach will be a similar person to Farker, because that's the model that the clubs create. They're not all of a sudden going to bring in one of the, you know, the Warnock types who's going to demand, you know, anyone like that would demand to have control, which clearly Farker hasn't got total control because the model we've got. So I think, yeah, you're right, fans who want a different type of manager or loads of money to be thrown at it are going to be disappointed. So if Farker went, it would be a similar, I guess, type of guy that would come in.
And we'll see how everyone deals with it, of course. Just then, Cardiff, I mean, Ipswich are bottom and winless, and it's Paul Hurst's first derby, which will be a fascinating occasion, because I think all in all they've been pretty awful so far this season, even though the fans are actually enjoying the fact that it's not Mick McCarthy and they're not playing anti-football. There was a remarkable call on, I think it was BBC Five Live last night with Chris Sutton and an Ipswich fan saying they don't even care if they get relegated because it's not Mick McCarthy and they're not hoofing the ball on, which is, I mean, I appreciate it was 16 years or whatever it was and six of Mick McCarthy, but still a remarkable. And then saying it in the same breath as, well, other teams have gone down to League One and then just come back up. And it's never quite that straightforward, to be honest, although some clubs are lucky to experience it. So that's one discussion, of course. And then Cardiff, Josh Murphy, possible reunion, although we're not sure if he'll play or not because he has been doing well in the Premier League. And it's going to be a chance for Daniel Farker to play a lot of those youngsters, I suppose, and give them another run out and see if he can kick them on. And it could be, I guess, the last time we see some of them, because the loan window will be open, the transfer window is open for just a few days after this game. If Norwich go out, there's probably a big option there to say, right, we don't need you now for the rest of the season or until Christmas, off you go.
Possibly, yeah, possibly. But you'd like to think that goes the other way. And then, well, Godfrey wouldn't go out irrespective, but, you know, if he puts down a marker at Cardiff, then to me, the result and progress in the cup is secondary to Farker getting some proper options, you know, when it comes round to the Championship grind again. I think Zimmerman, with a decent performance, would start to exert some pressure on Messrs Closer and Hanley, because they're not convincing anybody at the minute. They're the solid, reliable centre-back pairing. So, for me, those lads, if you want to label them as a catch-all fringe players term, then there is a lot on the line for them at Cardiff, because if they catch the eye, then it gives Farker some food for thought, because the reality is 4 points from 15, the lads who he is playing in the Championship aren't delivering. So that's for me what Cardiff's all about, certainly in terms of a window into potentially improving the Championship form.
I thought it was interesting Farker said that actually Tuesday to Sunday is a long enough gap for some proper recovery, so it maybe is viable. They're not too worried that players will be able to go again if they play in Cardiff. They're flying there and flying back, so that'll be useful as well. Of course, the Ipswich have got an entire week off. So the derby, Clarkie, how are you feeling about it?
I wonder if we did a poll, how many fans would take a draw at the moment? I've been thinking about it myself, and normally I would say I definitely want to win, but if the choice was take a draw, I'm a bit of a coward, but I probably would, you know, because a win would clearly be a great result. Defeat would be hideous because they are so poor. So are we. So yeah, I hate to say it and I hate to admit it on air, but I probably would take a draw down there.
And we haven't even discussed whether Norwich should play three at the back, Paddy.
What do you think, mate?
I can see the merits, and I can see why people would suggest it fits the, mainly because Norwich is wing back. Norwich have got wing backs; they don't really have full backs to a degree. I think Jamal's a decent left back, but I think certainly on the right, I think Evo, Felix Paslak, who we've barely seen, Ben Marshall especially, you'd want those as wing backs, and it's then a question of what you do in the middle. They haven't got an out and out number 10 like Maddison this year, so you don't necessarily have to play like that. In fact, they basically played a 4-3-3 on Saturday, so that was without a number 10. So I could definitely see it as a change, and it did all right last year.
Yeah, well, that's the key. I mean, without forensically going through all the best performances seem to be with a three, because they were far more solid. And we're talking about Krul, and Krul is spreading instability because you know, he's not reliable enough. Well, the reverse is true. You know, if you're really solid as a unit, defensive unit, then that spreads all through the team. And it's not hardly a coincidence that when they looked very good at the back, they were eking out results. And okay, that then flows into a different debate about, well, they weren't scoring enough goals, they were too reliant on Maddison. But the final analysis was that was the platform which allowed them to get some consistency in results, and through that you breed confidence. So for me, as much as Farker is quite keen to play down that these situations are finding themselves in now are different to last season, there does seem to be a lot of parallels. You know, they might not be as open across midfield as they were this time last year, but they're just as poor defensively because the goals against column tells you that.
Okay, any other business at this point normally, but Dave's not here to bring some because we never have any, so we can just say we haven't got any, which is good. Thank you everyone for listening, we much appreciate it. Of course, it is goodbye to Clarkie, goodbye.
Yeah, on the ball city as usual.
And goodbye, Pad.
Good afternoon and goodbye.
Goodbye from me, goodbye. Of course, needless to say, myself and Paddy will be in Cardiff on Tuesday to bring you full coverage, analysis and reaction, pinkin.com. Likewise, before and after and during the derby on Sunday. Deadline day on Friday, we have it all covered, and then hopefully come next Monday, we can do one of these podcasts once again. Pinkin.com for all the latest Norwich City news, analysis, opinion and transfer insight. We have got this season covered, and we will be back every Monday one way or another to prove it. Make sure you get in touch and get involved as well. This is your podcast as much as it is ours. Paddy and I better get in the car because we've got to head for Cardiff. Better make sure we get there in time, Pad. It is a long old poke. Enjoy it if you're going, and if that's possible, of course. And we will see you on the other side of what is going to be a very interesting week. Goodbye, and on the ball, City!